Welcome back to another episode of M&A Access. My name is Ekaterina, and today I am joined by Amanda David. Amanda, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
You're currently in Canada. How is the weather there? Tell me.
It's just been so busy. I wouldn't know. but yeah, no, the weather is definitely getting a little bit warmer. So spring has definitely sprung.
Yes. Yeah. Beautiful time of the year. So tell us a little bit about your background first.
Yeah, absolutely. So my background sits at the intersection of business transformation, enterprise systems, and M&A transformation. So simply, you know, I've had a lot of opportunity to think about how organizations maneuver complex change. So, and that connects very closely with my work at 180 Systems. We help organizations make better technology decisions. So in M&A, that matters quite a bit because business systems is where often the deal thesis meets operational reality. So what led me to kind of my research is, I'm a PhD candidate at the moment. What led me to my research was seeing the gap between getting the deal done and actually realizing the value after close. So while most companies have strong deal discipline, integration is still where the things become very difficult and inconsistent. And integration debt becomes very obvious there. So what pushed me to study how serial acquirers build integration capability is, and why some organizations, get better with with acquisition, while others, keep repeating the same issues, unfortunately, just under a different deal name every time.
So what drew you to this area specifically? Maybe it was a person, maybe it was, I don't know, a podcast you listened to, or just what was it?
I've been in M&A for like the last 10 years. So I've seen a lot, there's a lot that's been kind of focused around just getting the deal closed, but not enough around the integration process, because again, that's where the value is realized. And because of that significant gap, I decided to kind of go hard at it and really try to see, how much I can contribute to the M&A world and see what I can solve there.
Mm-hmm. So what made you interested in why some companies get better with each acquisition while others seem to start from scratch every time?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. So for me, it's really, how do I say this in a way that makes sense? And I apologize because I think from an academic perspective, so trying to put it in like a conversational tone gets a little bit, difficult for me. But the difference is really the deliberate learning. So what that means is that serial acquirers don't automatically get better because they do more deals. Repetition, unfortunately, just isn't enough. So in some cases, organizations repeat the same mistake just with more confidence. And better serial acquirers, however, turn experience into organizational knowledge. They start to look honestly at what happened after the deal and what worked, what failed and what needs to change before the next acquisition. And then they use that learning to improve their governance, their playbooks, resourcing and the decision making.
Mm-hmm. What patterns did you start noticing just from your 10 years of experience in this industry?
What patterns did I start noticing? I would say that one is assuming that just because the transaction is closed, the organization is automatically aligned. And that's a really big one. So legally, the deal may be complete, but operationally, the business may still be far from integrated. So another thing is underestimating the work. So integration really does create a lot of extra pressure for especially the functional teams. So people are expected to run the business and change the business at the same time. And that's not an easy task.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think integration so often starts too late?
I have a list. Would you like to hear my list? No, probably not. I think integration often starts late because the deal process is naturally focused around getting to close, right? So the energy is more really around valuation, the diligence, the maintaining deal momentum. Integration questions can sometimes introduce like friction because they force leaders to ask the harder questions, right? So things like people, system, and the operating model. So these questions do matter, but they can complicate the deal conversation. So I don't think that integration starts late because people forget that it matters. I think it starts late because the difficult problems are often deferred, and the problem is that deferred decisions don't just disappear, right? They'll show up and often in different ways, and sometimes even value leakage. So I see that maybe integration as more of a governance issue, not just a timing issue. So yeah, integration starts late because the post-close execution is treated like tomorrow's problem, unfortunately.
Where does it usually begin to go wrong?
I think that firms need to stop treating technology integration as a part of as a cleanup task after close, if you will, right? Because technology is really the part of the value creation because the systems shape how the business actually runs. And if the systems are not understood early, the combined business may look integrated on paper, but underneath teams may still be working on like separate data, separate processes, and even sometimes manual workarounds. And that affects a lot of things like reporting, customer service, cost, and how quickly the synergies can be realized. And why technology due diligence needs to go beyond just inventory. So what typically happens that usually, you know, you just do a checklist of what exists and what does not. And that's it's not enough to know what systems a target has. So firms need to understand whether these systems will support the future business or become a source of cost and risk.
So, do you think it's more a planning issue or a leadership issue?
I would think that it's just a little bit more than that. As I mentioned that, you know, they get deferred, right? I would almost think that it's really a governance and a leadership authority thing. So governance and leadership authority matter because integration cuts across the whole business, right? It's not just owned by one function. So, finance, IT, HR, and operations may all have different priorities, and all of them will be reasonable. But if no one is making the trade-offs at the integration level, the work can get messy very quickly. That's why I see like governance more of a decision-making, not just meeting cadence. It gives the organization a way to kind of make the hard calls, resolve disagreements, and keep the integration moving.
And it takes more than just a playbook to make integration work well as well. What else really needs to be there?
Absolutely. I think you hit the nail on the head on that. But let me just say, I'm very pro playbook. I really like playbooks. They're useful because they give people structure, consistency, and a common language. But a playbook is not the same thing as a capability. A playbook can tell people, you know, what should happen, whereas a capability is whether the organization can actually make it happen repeatedly under real conditions. And that's really the harder part. So for integration to become repeatable, I think three things matter most. It's clear governance, real authority for the integration lead, as well as proper support for the work. People need to know who makes the decisions, how issues get escalated, and what happens when the teams disagree.
What are companies usually missing during that process?
The way that I think about it is that I would start with clarity, right? I think clarity is definitely missing. So before a firm strengthens their integration capability, it needs to be clear on why the deal was done and what has to be true for value to be realized. And I know that sounds simple, but it's often where integration starts to drift. And there, I would look at governance. You know, again, who owns the integration? Who is making the decision? And how will the organization resolve the issue when the teams actually disagree? So if things are unclear, even a good integration plan can stall. So I from there I would actually focus on areas that could create the most risk after close. So that may be people, customers, technology. The point is not to treat every work stream equally. The point is to understand where value could be delayed or lost. And I think that's missed quite a bit because everybody's, rushing to get to the close, but then in integration, people just get tapped on the shoulder and say, "Okay, it's your turn now. You're it. You run with it."
You said you really like playbooks. So, based on your experience, I'm curious, what separates a useful playbook from the one that just sits on the shelf?
It has to be operationally reliable, right? There's tons and tons of literature out there that are really more like a college textbook, if you will. And tons of people are going through this kind of, scratching their head saying, well, where do I start? I think that there's definitely a need, not just for checklists, but in an appropriate guidebook that will walk through each aspect of the process, not only from a checklist base, but on how to build that capability over time so that it can be applied to an array of deals, right? Something that's industry agnostic as well as process differentiating.
So since you've been in the industry for such a long time, do you have a story to share of a memorable deal that went exactly like the book, the playbook said it would, or went exactly the opposite way?
So many deals, but unfortunately, not everything goes according to playbook. As I mentioned, playbooks are generally tell you what to do, not necessarily how to do them. So there was an instance where I will talk about a purchase, a merger that happened, or an acquisition. Let's talk about that one actually. So a security organization purchased another smaller security organization back in 2000 and I'd say 24. And what happened there was that there were synergies that were realized pre close. Not realized, but noted that there's a certain amount of dollars that are going to be what's the word that I'm looking for, that are going to revenue will go up by a certain percentage. There's certain synergies that can be realized by what's the word that I'm looking for, integrating certain teams and certain technology, and then there would be an upgrade in the product service offering within an extended geography. So all of that on paper looked really good. But then when you went to go and integrate that after close, it was very quickly realized that these two organizations unfortunately will not be able to integrate because their technologies are vastly different. The data is not transferable. And not only that, there's a big cultural difference, right? So because I'm more on the technology side, I kind of focus more about on the business systems and things of that nature. But culture plays a really, really big role. So unfortunately, at the end of it, what had to happen was that it needed to be a standalone organization until that work stream was developed so that they could integrate appropriately.
So how do decisions made before the deal closes affect what happens after the deal closes?
It affects a lot. When I say affects a lot, it's because, as mentioned, a lot of these things are pre-close. It's all about getting to the close. It's about valuation, it's about diligence, it's about legal. It's hardly ever about integration. And integration is where you're actually going to realize the value or, maximize on those synergies and actually see the fruit. But unfortunately, because the momentum is so strongly on just closing the deal, those harder, integration questions that may cause friction gets pushed off to post-close.
So what kind of decisions tend to create problems later? Do you have like top three terrible decisions to make?
Top three terrible decisions. Yes, defer. Defer technical and operational challenges. That would be the number one, I would say. And this deferral causes, as mentioned, something called integration debt, right? What your value starts to erode if you push these things past post-close. Like it isn't. Integration should not be tomorrow's problem. It's something that you should be looking at today to give you a better idea of exactly, what that sequencing would look like, the integration sequencing, and who's going to make those decisions, right? Like if operations says that they will not be able to, let me reframe it from a technology perspective. Okay, so if a system migration will take something like, I don't know, 12 months, and finance decides that they need the reporting in 2 months, then who is it? Who's going to take that decision? What element of the business do you risk to realize which synergy? That's very important.
We're taking just a quick break from this conversation to let you know about some upcoming conversations that you could be a part of too. This summer in Chicago at AMA's Summer Conference, you have the opportunity to meet with hundreds of decision makers with over $1 billion in the transactional buying power. There will be panels with insights like what you find in this podcast, hundreds of meetings happening, as well as really great networking opportunities. You can find out more at amaconference.com. Hope to see you there.
You started talking about integration debt a little bit. Can you explain what that means in simple terms?
Yeah, absolutely. So the simple way to think about integration debt is that it builds up when hard decisions are pushed off during I guess the deal process, right? So it's similar to technical debt. You can move fast by avoiding certain decisions up front, but the work, as I mentioned, it just doesn't go away. So it moves into like post-transaction period where it's very, very difficult and sometimes disruptive to fix.
Can you give an example of that?
Yeah, absolutely. So in M&A, this often happens when leaders have not been clear on like how the combined business will actually operate, right? So just like how we were talking earlier, the decisions around the people, system, and reporting may feel difficult during the deal, so they get delayed. But once the transaction's complete, those decisions will come back very, very quickly, and that's when integration debt starts to show up as I'd call it operational friction. So teams are working around decisions that should have been made earlier, and that slows down the value realization. So again, to me, integration debt is created during the deal, but unfortunately, it's paid for during integration.
When does a company usually realize it has that problem?
Too late. It unfortunately realizes too late. It's really at the integration level where when they start to put things together, right? Depending on the sequencing that they decided, whether they're going to merge, the systems first or the operations first or HR or people. These start coming up very, very fast. Lots and lots of questions will be asked, and especially if, the deal team is gone, the consultants are gone, and you're just relying on people who had integrated before, but if they have switched roles since then, it becomes very, very difficult.
So, what are some common mistakes companies make after a deal closes that can really slow things down or even hurt value?
Yeah, there's a lot there, actually.
Which ones do you see most often?
Most often, it's really related. Again, I would point to technology because the reason is that there is just so much in there. It's like renovating a house, right? If you purchase a home, you want to renovate it, you really don't know what you're getting into until you stop, you've already pulled out all of the walls, and now you discover you need new pipes. Your water is not flowing correctly. Sometimes your wires are not even grounded, and you'll get an electric shock every time you try to touch something. So, I think there's a lot there from a technology perspective. And the other thing is, I'll go back to culture. Again, the last thing that you want to do is start a rumor mill by staying quiet. Communication needs to be handled appropriately in order to go through a successful integration.
And which of those mistakes are the hardest to fix later? Communication or technology?
That's a really good question. I think they kind of go hand in hand, right? So employees, customers, managers, systems, they all clarity is required everywhere. This is where if there's silence, like people kind of start to fill in the gaps themselves, and they can create rumors. And some organizations don't actually pause to learn from this, unfortunately. So what they tend to do is that they stop. They don't bother asking the questions like what worked, what failed, how did we do the technology integration last piece? What did we do to communicate appropriately in the last transaction? They capture that as like tacit knowledge, but they don't turn it into organizational knowledge.
What about the companies that do this well? What do they have in common?
Yeah, I would have to say that firms need to create a learning loop. And all the interviews that I have done with the folks that provided context to my research have said pretty much the same thing, that they should ask what worked, what failed, and what should change next time. For serial acquirers especially, the goal is not to make every integration identical. It's to build a repeatable capability that can adapt to different deal contexts. So the best place to start is not really with a checklist. It's again with clarity, like what value did you actually buy, and what must change to realize it, and do you have the capability to execute it repeatedly?
So companies that do this successfully, are they usually better because of people, process, leadership, or maybe all of the above?
I would have to say that, again, to become good at repeatable integration, three things matter most: a clear governance, real authority for integration leads, and proper support for the work.
So a little bit of everything.
A little bit of everything.
So, are there any early signs that an integration might go off track that you have noticed in your 10 years of career in M&A world?
Yeah, absolutely. So I again, it has to do with the pre-close, right? So if in pre-close you have a deal thesis and that's not communicated across the board to the folks that will be doing the integration, that's a big one. And then the other one is not involving the integration teams soon enough to be able to execute on the value that needs to be realized.
And after a deal is done, what should companies be learning from it before they move on to the next one?
Yeah, I think we alluded to this just a little bit earlier. It's really about creating a learning loop, creating a mechanism where they're going through each transaction and putting it into, creating the playbook, or not even creating the playbook, updating their playbook every time, learning from each deal and putting in the appropriate, the governance structures, bringing in the integration teams earlier, making sure that they've given the integration leads the appropriate authority to help make those decisions, right? So I think that's a real differentiator. And if people are able to, or I'd say acquirers are able to capture that and make it become organizational knowledge, then it wouldn't matter if consultants go, or if people move roles, they will have that as an organizational piece that they can adapt and apply to every acquisition as they proceed.
Yeah, so it seems like everybody knows step-by-step process, yet companies still fail to follow it. Why do you think that happens? Is it lack of time, lack of energy? I don't know. Lack of communication, lack of motivation to purchase? I don't know. It seems so obvious that don't make this mistake, and yet people still make it.
Yeah, you know what? And that's and that's exactly it. So it's not that we don't know how to integrate organizations. I think we're just not good at building an appropriate capability that will allow us to do it repeatedly. There's tons and tons of literature out there. Some say that, okay, well, maybe this literature isn't making it to the folks. And some people read it and they're looking at it and they say, yes, okay, this is helpful. And they'll take bits and pieces of it. But unfortunately, forgetfulness is that, again, it's that tacit knowledge, right? So some people would have that knowledge because they've been through this experience, but taking that what people know and turning it into a capability are two different things. So I think the failure here is that people know what they know. They know how to integrate companies, but what changes from deal to deal, they're not capturing that and they're not turning it into, a repeatable capability.
So, after the deal is done, what should companies be learning from before they move on to the next one?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So there's a couple of different elements there, right? For companies to strengthen their capability, I would say that, again, it goes back to the whole governance piece, right? So who owns the integration? Who makes the decisions? That's got to be ironclad. And then a focus on areas that would create the most risk after close. The goal again is to try to create a repeatable capability that's going to help you with each deal as you go. Lots happens, and because upfront it's so focused on closing, the integration piece, not everybody gets to say a voice, right? They don't get to have a voice. They don't get to say what's needed. And the decision isn't there. So it gets a little bit hazy there.
And before we end this episode, what advice would you give to companies that want to get better at post-merger integration?
I would say invest in creating that repeatable capability. Depending on the deal size, depending on the size of the organization, I know it can become challenging sometimes, but if you ha people have full-time jobs and then you want them to do integration on top of that, it can cause a lot of friction and unnecessary tension. If you have the ability, I would say invest in creating a repeatable capability that allows you to capture lessons learned from every acquisition and then modify your strategy as you go to your next acquisition so you can achieve better results sooner.
That was very well said. And looking ahead, what do companies need to do differently if they want integration to create real long-term value?
Yeah, it's again, it's about communication, it's about learning, and it's about setting up the appropriate governance structures. If you can learn from each deal you did, not in a tacit way, and when I say that, I mean tacit's, it's just people and their experience, and you're counting on somebody to remember what they did last time. Creating that, turning that into organizational knowledge where, everybody knows, despite of what happens, you're able to create a capability and do things and do it really well over and over again, despite of the variations in the deal size or industry or geography.
And how can people get in touch with you, Amanda, and learn more about what you do and your services?
Yeah, absolutely. So I can be I can be reached at 180systems.com. You can go to the website there and check out what our services offer. We do everything from ERP implementation, system selection to M&A advisory. But yeah.
Perfect. Thank you, Amanda, so much for joining us today. Had a pleasure. It was very educational.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you again for having me, Kate.
Thank you. And thank you so much for watching and listening to M&A Access. Until next time, stay tuned.
These kinds of conversations are happening all the time. We'd love for you to join in, whether it's through our monthly webinars, our biannual conferences, or our CIMA certification. And then we have our chapter events across the nation all year round. You can find out more at amaaonline.com. Until then, see you next time.